yes, there are people that join to do these scams voluntarily, but then once they're in the compounds, they're actually faced with the same amount of torture and violence. And we can judge the exact estimate of people, but roughly we're looking in the high hundreds of thousands, if not even more, of people that are being forced to do these types of online scams. And it's not just the pig butchering romance scams.
Human trafficking doesn't always take the form we first imagine. It can be found at almost any level of an organization's supply chain. What can compliance professionals do to assess human trafficking risk, and how can they leverage the resources of the organizations they work for to help root out this tragic problem? Gwen Hassan is here to help. This is Hidden Traffic.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Hidden Traffic. I am your host, Gwen Hassan. Today, I'm not only excited, but honored to have with me Valentina Kasuli, Head of Operations, and Mohammed Abdul Salam. Both of them are from Humanity Research Consultancy. I love your title, Salam. It's like my favorite title I think I've ever heard. Survivor Empowerment Officer. What an awesome title. Welcome to the podcast, both of you. I'm happy to have you here.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Sure. So let's start out with just learning a little bit about yourself. What are your backgrounds? Where do you both live? How did you come to work for HRC?
Firstly, thank you for having us on. I'm Valentina Kasuli. I am British Italian. I was born and raised in the UK. Half my family's from Italy. Background-wise, I studied Chinese and French at the University of Leeds for my undergrad. Chose Chinese on a whim, really, just because it's useful and something interesting. After that, I went straight into my master's at Sussex University in human rights. From there, got chatting to a friend, and they told me about Mina. And Mina Chang is the founder and director of Humanity Research Consultancy, HRC. Told me about HRC and the research work they do and how they work in human rights. And that was always something I wanted to do, investigation, but also for a good cause, even though the role existed or like companies like that existed. And then, just reached out to Mina. A year later, here we are.
Fantastic. How about you, Salam?
Hi, Hassan. My name is Abdul Salam and I am from Bangladesh. Actually, I'm an early career researcher and human rights activist in human trafficking area. I have received the university degree of textile engineering. I used to work in ready-made garments in Bangladesh. And actually, So as I worked in Bangladesh as a textile engineer, but I was getting very low salary. And my friend, he offered me a job in Cambodia. He offered me like high-paying job. So I decided to go abroad 2022. I have been trafficked in Cambodia. And I was worked there in several scamming compounds for 5 months, then with the global anti-scam organization, I have been rescued from a scamming compound. And one of my friends, he actually introduced me with Humanity Research Consultancy. Yeah. After that, I had some conversation with Mina and she helped me to get back home. She purchased my flight ticket because when I got rescued, I was in empty pocket. So I have no money to buy my flight tickets. Bought my flight tickets. She helped me to get back my home. And after I get back my home, when I was struggling to getting job and recovery from my trauma, that time actually she offered me to working with her organization, Humanity Research Consultancy, as a survivor empowerment officer. And since November 2022, I was working with Humanity Research Consultancy as a survivor empowerment officer.
That's an incredible story. First of all, I'm so glad that Mina found you. That's amazing. And that you have decided now to devote your work in life to helping other people avoid this kind of horrible crime and teaching people about it, I think is amazing. So thank you for the work you do, both of you. I really appreciate it. All right. So you mentioned scams and kind of a scam mill. Why don't you fill us in a little bit about what that is? I was talking to someone actually just yesterday at a compliance conference here in Chicago and was explaining that I was going to record this episode today and that it had to do with scam mills. And they were very confused. They're like, wait, what? What is that? I've never heard of that before. What is a scam mill? So can you give our listeners some kind of background in what that is?
Yeah, sure. Actually, scams have various forms, but when I was trafficked in Cambodia and I was forced to scam people online, it's actually called pickpocket selling scam and Roma's scam. The process is actually find people from rich countries like USA and European Union and make relationship with that people, maybe romance relationship, maybe friend relationship, and encourage them to invest money in cryptocurrency and making profit from that investment. You can say like crypto trading. And when actually we found some people actually making relationship, most of the time we used to make a love relationship with people, middle-aged people. Yeah. And we encourage them to invest their money in cryptocurrency. They can make easy money from cryptocurrency trading, and we will guide them how to make money. And behind us all time, like team supervisor, team leader, they actually watch what we're doing and they are guiding us. You have to work in this and this way. And they give us some script. We have to follow that script to making relation and falling people in the trap of scammers. Someone like fall in love with our characters. Always actually we use fake characters. I am Salam, I'm a male, and I used to like play female character in social media, like on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and different dating application, Tinder, Dent and Jomo, this kind of dating and dating application. And when we find some people, potential people who are falling in love with our character, then we actually send them some trading screenshots, how to make money. And actually, we show them we make a lot of profits from cryptocurrency trading, and we're encouraging them to invest in cryptocurrency. And when they, once they're willing to invest in cryptocurrency and making money from here, then we actually guide them step by step how to open a crypto wallet like Binance account, Coinbase account, how to buy cryptocurrency from that kind of wallet. And after they buying cryptocurrency from the original wallet, we actually send them some application, fake trading application, sometimes trading software, and hit them link and sometimes a specific app. And when they send the money in their fake application, then first few days we show some profit. They are getting some profit, and first of all, we give them on one withdrawal, like one single withdrawal. We told them like nowadays actually people are hurting people on online cryptocurrency, so you are investing your money here, so you should check the platform is real or fake. So you should try withdraw your money. And when they try to withdraw their money, we actually got notification and we gave them a withdrawal. And when they successfully withdraw their money, we encouraging them to invest in like big capital, big amount of money in that trading platform, because now that time we can told them, okay, this is the real trading application, you can withdraw your money, so you have to, so now it's your time to make more and more money from here. So okay, let's take big amount together. Then when they invested large amount of money, we just disconnect all the means of communication with those people. And this is the way actually scammers scam people. And always scammers are like me, they're forced to scam people. If they're not scammed people, or if they are able to scam any people, then they got punishment from the company bosses, like supervisor beating up, electric shots, long time working hours, like 16 hours, 18 hours in a day.
Oh my gosh.
Without any tip. Yeah, and terrible physical torturing.
Thank you so much for sharing your experience. I will tell you, I struggled a bit as I was planning this call because I wanted to be sure that I was trauma-informed as I talked to you, because the last thing I want was to force you in any way to relive a really bad experience. So the fact that you offered that up just on your own accord to share it with people means a lot. Thank you. I'm going to offer up my own vulnerable story here, which I think will put this into context. So I am divorced. I am single, and I have been for many years. Before the pandemic, back in 2019, a friend convinced me to get on a dating app, and I had a dating app profile. And I started talking with somebody who said that they were, you know, overseas for work, and, you know, they traveled a lot, and that's why they could only message me in the middle of the night, because, you know, they were in the Far East working for their company, but they'd be back in Chicago in a couple of weeks. I started to think it was a little odd. And then, like, within, I don't know, maybe a week, it was, oh, Gwen, I just think you're the most amazing woman I've ever met. And I am so in love with you. And I can't wait to meet you. And I'm going to come home soon. And we should go out to dinner at this place. And it's going to be amazing. And I was like, huh, this seems not right. This seems oddly fast to me for somebody to be suddenly in love with me. But okay. And then sure enough, about maybe 10 days total that we had been talking through this dating app, the person, now I know, may not have been a man at all, but a person messaged me and said, oh my gosh, Gwen, you know, I told you I'm on this trip in the Middle East and I have been mugged. I was attacked in the middle of the night and they took my wallet, but luckily my phone was on my inside pocket. So I still have my phone so I can reach out to you, but I'm trapped here. And they have my passport and they have all my money. Can you wire me some money so I can get home? I love you so much. And I was like, okay, this is clearly not an actual person who's interested in me. This is a scam. So I, of course, disconnected and I actually quit all of the apps and I've never been on any other dating app again. But what I didn't know until really within the last couple of months is that the people who are doing those kind of scams are being forced to do the scams and are being trafficked to do those scams. And I think that is really shocking for a lot of people. And
yeah,
and tell us a little more about the history of this or how big it is.
Yeah, I think because scams have been around for quite a while now. And as well, the difference with this is when you think of a scam, especially in the UK climate, which is where I've grown up, scams are usually, you think of like an elderly woman at home who just gets a phone call or like clicks on a link on a really obviously dodgy email.
Yeah.
But it's not like that at all. These people are preying on people's vulnerabilities. And like Salam said, you have a script that is going through psychological tactics. It's a really thought out crime. Yes, there are people that join to do these scams voluntarily, but then once they're in the compounds, they're actually faced with the same amount of torture and violence. And we can judge the exact estimate of people, but roughly we're looking in the high hundreds of thousands, if not even more, of people that are being forced to do these types of online scams. And it's not just the pig butchering romance scams. I saw a post today by Erin West, who is a cryptocurrency investigator. She's doing a lot to counter the pig butchering scams. How she recently learned that they're also in the triangulation fraud. So that's about spoofing company websites in England, maybe like you have like the Asda website that's spoofed and then people make payments through that. And that's also been linked to the scamming compounds. There's lots of different crimes. So that could be even making online videos, like sexually explicit videos that people are forced to partake in. And it's all linked to this crime. And they use cryptocurrency to launder the money. So then when it gets back to the criminals in the hotspot countries, it's untraceable through the blockchain. It's really difficult to find people's money again.
My gosh, when you say compound, help me understand what that looks like. Is this people who are living and working in an office building? What does it look like?
It's gated compounds.
Okay.
It'll be like apartment blocks with rows and rows of computers in multiple stories.
I just shared a small information. Yeah, scammers are often actually targeted single person, like a divorced person. And when they found some person like 45 years or 50 years old man and he divorced them, scammers actually say, oh, I am also a single mom. I have been divorced a few years ago. I was also looking for a partner. So they actually will stop making this kind of stories.
Mm. All right. So for those of you who are listening to the podcast, Valentina has just shared some pictures of what looks like a small village. I mean, it is a town. This is particularly in Cambodia. Yeah.
Yeah. And for those listening, if you go on the HRC website, you can find this in our briefing, Cyber Slavery and the Scamming Compounds, the first briefing that we released on this issue. And this is just one of the compounds. And it shows on Google Maps satellite image, you can go and you can find them. Some of them, shockingly, have reviews. if you actually go on the locations, you can see the reviews and people are putting in the reviews. Oh, don't go here. It's a death trap. People are getting forced to scam. And it's almost unbelievable to say it out loud, but that's the reality that we're facing at the moment. It's so open, such an open crime. You have the criminals discussing the tactics on Telegram groups that anyone can open and join, sharing videos of people being tortured.
I saw the notes too on the pictures that many of them are completely surrounded by forests, making it very difficult for people to try and leave. And there was also a shot of an apartment building that had bars across all of the windows and the doors and fences. And I mean, it looks more like a prison compound than an apartment compound. My goodness. Yeah. I think there's a lot of people here in the United States, especially, who are completely unaware that this is happening. So let's pivot for a minute and talk about what you're doing, the Humanity Research Consultancy. What is the methodology that you're using to try and fight these scam compounds, and who are your primary working groups that you work with?
We work with decision makers in government and the private sector, and also NGOs. And we're a social enterprise. Our focus is to use and work with local consultants and local talent. So often in international development, you get these big name NGOs coming in, and they always bring international researchers, usually from the West, in to do a study in Cambodia, for example, or Vietnam.
Okay.
But someone who grew up in America, they don't know about the context in Cambodia. They've never lived there. They don't speak the language. You really need that local insight to be able to understand the situation beyond just collecting data, going for a day, interviewing some people and then leaving. So that's what we do at HRC. We use local insight to actually create sustainable, sensitive solutions that will work long-term to create systemic change.
That's amazing. It sounds to me too like that use of local resources can help you understand the root cause of some of the issues, right? As to why people end up in these situations and how they're manipulated and taken advantage of to be in a compound like that. So you're one of the few organizations that I've seen so far that really focuses on survivor voices and survivor involvement, which I think is just amazing. Can you tell us a little bit about how your work, Salam, has touched other survivors and what your daily work is with HRC? Are you in kind of a counseling role? Are you in an advocacy role? Is it all of the above? What does a day at work look like for you at HRC?
Yeah, actually, that's really rare and interesting, like involving survivors in a team. And in our team, we have two survivors. So one is new intern from Uganda, and there is I. So as you know, my title is Survivor Empowerment Officer. So actually, my role is empowering survivors by giving some counseling. And we actually work remote-based. So we are not able to go survivors home, like door-to-door, and we cannot actually empower them. But we have some connection with other organizations who are like working with survivors. Like I was here working with a survivor-led organization called Anirban, and they are all working for trafficking survivors, and they have a very strong voice for survivors. So I actually do advocacy with that organization. Sometimes I also give them some consultancy on some specific issue. And what are the importance to including survivors in team? There are a lot of people working in countering human trafficking program, but people actually can understand the vulnerability and the pain of survivors. But one survivor can feel another survivor's pain and vulnerability. And actually, when I started my working with Humanity Research Consultancy, I found 7 Bangladeshi survivors, young guys. They actually detained in a scamming compound and Cambodian detention center. Then I work on them, and we coordinate with our partner organization, like Windrock International and other local partner organization. Then we successfully help them to get back home safely. Mm-hmm. So this is actually a role I'm playing in HRC. On the other hand, actually, I am helping our researcher to conduct research in the field.
What incredible work. Thank you again, Salam, for that work. I imagine it must feel very rewarding to know that you are able to help other people get out of the kind of situation that you were once in. So well done. Tell me, last question then, about what you think companies can do. So there's a lot of listeners that are people like me, attorneys or compliance professionals that are working for a large corporation. Besides being aware in their personal lives of the fact that scams are often coming from a scam compound like this, what do you think companies can do? Is the best way to start kind of a risk assessment? Do you think there's advocacy that companies should be doing? Do you partner with companies at HRC? Tell me a little bit about that.
Yes. Recently, we've worked heavily on the issue of the scamming compounds, but another area of expertise within HRC is the fishing supply chain and predominantly the tuna fishing supply chain. So we've done a lot of work with various NGOs and organizations mapping the tuna supply chain. And that's something that companies need to be doing if they want to figure out where the modern slavery exists within their supply chains. Because as the world expands all the time and these supply chains are becoming more and more complex, yeah. And it's like you get one product, you don't know where it came from at the beginning. So we worked with a global cosmetic giant to create a mitigation and prevention plan of the issues of forced labor and human rights violations they had and they'd found in their own supply chain through a third-party auditing. We're not an auditing consultancy. So with that process, we looked through the audit that they had already. Then we spoke with the suppliers, interviewed them, and with a lot of the suppliers being in Taiwan, that's where our language expertise comes in.
Yes.
And if it was, say, in Vietnam, and we don't have any Vietnamese nationals on the team right now, we would hire local consultants to do that. With an external company, that's what you need to be doing. You need to be hiring someone with the expertise on human rights, international human rights laws, the ILO, forced labor conventions, and really work with the suppliers to make them understand there's not a one-size-fits-all kind of solution to this. You can't just have a human rights guidebook and give it to all your suppliers because everyone else takes away the passports of all their workers. Why is it an issue? There might be fine in their local context. So that's why it's so important to actually understand what kind of situation are they working in? What are the factors that are pushing them to do this? Other root causes that are pushing them to influence these, input these inhumane working conditions.
Thank you. So how can people learn more and get in touch with you? Or if they want help analyzing their risk, who do they talk to? Let us know how to get in touch with both of you.
Yes. So you can just send either of us an email. My email is valentina.c@humanity-consultancy.com. Or you can go on our website and there's a consultancy booking page on our website. So the website is humanity-consultancy.com. And we are on LinkedIn, YouTube, and Facebook as well.
Lots of ways to reach you. Thank you both so much. I really appreciate your time and Salam, your candor and willingness to tell your story. I hope that many people will reach out to learn more about Humanity Research Consultancy. Thank you both. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Gwen.
Thank you. Thank you, Asar.